35 takeaways from National Public Health Week. We hosted 7 panels on 7 public health topics with 17 expert public health panelists with over 7 hours of public health conversations. 100% valuable insights were shared. A successful National Public Health Week was had. When I started my public health journey back in 2017, I wish I had known that there were so many ways to impact health and do prevention work through public health. All of the takeaways that I share today came from the National Public Health Week panels that I hosted, so be sure to check those out if you have not as yet. And if you'd like to learn about overarching themes that came up throughout this entire National Public Health Week, well, be sure to stick around to the end. And just to give an idea of what the themes were for National Public Health Week, there are 7 themes, and I will list them as: on Monday, it was civic engagement; Tuesday, healthy neighborhoods; Wednesday, climate change; Thursday, new tools and innovations; Friday, reproductive and sexual health; Saturday, emergency preparedness; and Sunday, future of public health. Before we jump in, hi, everyone. My name is Omaria Richens. I am the host of Public Health Careers, the podcast, as well as the founder and CEO of the Public Health Millennial, where we help public health people learn, navigate, and transform their public health careers. If you had not subscribed as yet, be sure to hit that subscribe button. It really helps the show get out to more people. So greatly appreciate you all in that. So we're going to start off and go in order of the days. We're going to start with civic engagement. So we're diving into the power of civic engagement, exploring how active participation in community decisions can shape our future and foster a stronger sense of belonging for everyone. So the 5 takeaways from here were: conversations are the beginning of any civic change. Social media is a tool to improve civic engagement. There are ways to have impactful meetings with elected representatives. Black men make up a small percentage of MPH graduates, which is an advocacy issue. And we have to take small steps to be civically engaged today. So I'm going to dive deeper into each of these. Firstly, conversations are the beginning of any civic change. Overcoming lack of civic engagement starts with each of our communities. We must know the concerns of our communities at first, then start by having conversation with our neighbors, our friends, our family, and then collectively get organized and advocating for the issues that are important to us. So it's really about starting about what are the issues that are important to me, my neighbor, my friends, and my family, and then figuring out how you can come together to advocate for things to get better. 2, social media is a tool to improve civic engagement. Instagram is a tool to improve civic engagement as well. 60% of the US adults get news from Instagram. That statistic was alarming to me. I didn't know it was that high, but when I think back to my experiences, it's very similar. So we have to really make it a viable platform to educate audiences on pressing topics and to maintain public relevance in the topics that are important to civically engage about throughout our communities. Instagram should be leveraged along with other social media platforms to get more young people involved in voting and in civic engagement. 3, there are ways to have impactful meetings with elected representatives. One of the things that I learned on one of the panels is that there are ways to have these conversations. Impactful conversations with elected officials can be very simple. Some of the most impactful conversations are short, pointed, and concise. Effective meetings frame the problem, the solution or solutions, as well as the process to get to that solution. This will be backed by stories, data, and the need for consistent advocacy. And that's why I think it's so important for us to come together so we can get collective stories and just understand the broad scope of how the issue impacts us as communities so that we can better advocate for what we want in our communities. 3, Black men make up a small percentage of MPH graduates. This is an advocacy issue. Only 3.17% of Black men graduate with a Master of Public Health degree. We need to do a better job of sharing public health with disinvested communities. Share the value of the work and the impact you can have on your own community. Get into public health is not synonymous with getting an MPH, and we need to talk more about that. We need to talk about how you can have an impact in public health, doing public health work without an MPH, and that everyone has a role to play in ensuring that their community is safe and healthy and thriving. Number 5, take small steps to be civically engaged today. Some call to actions for you to be more civically engaged is find your people, get involved in small and big ways, just however you can. Start conversations with neighbors and collectively identify concerns in your community, and reach out to elected officials and advocate for your needs. They are there to represent you and your needs. And I think it's so important that we just start where we are and we think about civic engagement outside of voting. Too often it is intersecting and saying civic engagement is voting, but there's so much more to it than that. Moving on to healthy neighborhoods. We'll be exploring healthy neighborhoods and why where you live determines opportunity and the disparity in health outcomes. We look at how urban planning and public health are inextricably linked and tied to the population health outcomes that happen for certain communities. So the 5 main points that and themes that I wanted to highlight here were impact on built environment on health, disparities in life expectancy, urban and community planning importance, intersection of planners and public health, and modernizing built environment and cultural change. So the 6th takeaway is the impact of built environment on health. The environment in which people live, work, and play significantly influences community health. Healthy neighborhoods are essential for overall community health, and intentional community and urban planning should be prioritizing health equity in all steps. I think about this when I walk outside and I don't have sidewalks, or I have to go to the other side of the street to get to the sidewalks. So I think about the lack of transportation and public transportation to really get around a lot of cities. There's so many impacts of built environments, whether you have green space and parks. And I think it's so important that we continue to elevate the conversation around built environment and the impact it has on our health. Number 7, disparities in life expectancy. There's a 25-year life expectancy gap between high and low opportunity neighborhoods in the U.S. Oftentimes, or sometimes I should say, zip codes that are right next to each other can experience huge disparities in life expectancy and health outcomes. Environmental factors are closely tied to health outcomes, emphasizing the importance of addressing disparities and going back to addressing prevention and root causes to the issues that are impacting communities. Number 8, urban and community planning importance. Planning involves the interaction between public and private spaces, design of cities and public policies affecting communities. Comprehensive planning areas include land use, housing, transportation, open spaces, conservation, safety, and noise control. These are so important to consider that they are macro and micro things that come into play. They are public and private interests that come into play into our communities. So how can we work with all of these different agencies to ensure that our communities are safe and are creating ways for us to be healthier, or where health is an easier choice for each of us? Number 9, intersection of planners and public health. Planners play a vital role in public health, though not all of them recognize it. The collaboration between planning and public health can either help or harm communities, requiring better communication and advocacy. And this is why we need to continue to have our voices be heard, so that we can be a part of the planning conversations and that we can have the conversations and ask the questions, why are we doing this? How is this going to impact these communities that have been historically disinvested and marginalized? How can we work to better create communities that support and lift up people? And number 10, modernizing built environment and cultural change. Communities are evolving, requiring modernization and urban planning to reflect changing demographics and needs. Engaging the community voice through various platforms like school boards, planning committees, and community boards is crucial. Prioritizing health through community planning involves promoting healthy behaviors, making healthy choices accessible, and focusing on the vital conditions and well-being framework to address the social determinants of health. There are so many ways that we have to really ensure that when community change is happening, that people that are in the community, that care about our community, are have a voice in that change and have a voice in what the culture is going to come and how that community does change. And ideally, we'd ensure that those changes are as equitable as possible. Moving on to climate change. Climate change threatens global health, disproportionately impacting the vulnerable communities. Unsustainable corporate practices worsen health disparities, with urgent action needed to address its physical, mental, and societal impacts. Advocacy and system change are crucial to tackle climate anxiety, promoting sustainability, and ensuring equitable health access. So the five themes that emerged here were urgency of climate change and health impacts, corporate contributions to climate crisis and health disparities, climate change as a health challenge, global inequities and climate justice, and advocacy and action for climate health. So number 11, urgency of climate change and health impacts. Climate change is the most significant threat to global health, requiring immediate and intentional action to protect vulnerable communities. 3.6 billion people live in areas highly susceptible to climate change, and it is expected to cause 250,000 additional deaths annually between 2030 and 2060. Climate change manifests in various ways, including extreme weather events, disruptions to food systems, increased disease prevalence, mental health issues, and more. Climate change is around us. It's a topic that we need to continue to talk about because it's impacting each and every one of us in so many ways that we don't know. And we don't know what are going to be the long-term impacts of climate change, but we know that we have to advocate for the change to happen so that we can be on the right side of things as the climate does worsen and we can create solutions to the issues that do arise. Number 12, corporate contributions to climate crisis and health disparities. A lot of the unsustainable practices by corporations contribute to health disparities, with communities of color often facing higher pollution exposure. Some corporations manipulate data and shift responsibility to individuals, while healthcare waste and greenwashing further exacerbate the issue. There's so much to be said here. Too often we think of climate change as an individual issue, but it really is an issue of how do we advocate for change and incentive changes for the corporation so that they aren't polluting our nations, our world, our earth. I can't remember the statistic off the top of my head, but I want to say it's 100 corporations produce 70% of the greenhouse emissions or some astronomical number like that. So really trying to focus in on how can we change the policies, change the system in which these corporations operate in so that we can drive down a lot of these emissions. Number 13, climate change as a health challenge. Climate change presents multifaceted health challenges, from physical impacts like flooding and disease spread to mental health issues and indoor air pollution, which is a leading global cause of death. The interconnection of health, climate, food security, and education necessitates interdisciplinary collaboration and advocacy. Climate change isn't just going to be done by one person, one group of people, one group of public health people. There are so many intersecting fields that need to be a part of the conversation for climate advocacy. Number 14, global inequities and climate justice. Those least responsible for climate crisis often suffer its most severe consequences, emphasizing the need for the global north to support the global south. Climate impacts are felt differently across communities due to systemic inequities, with zip codes being a better predictor of health than genetic codes. We really have to think about how our impacts are impacting the world. As we saw during the pandemic, we can't think about this as isolated issues. Everything is interconnected, and we are interconnected as people. So we have to know that our actions affect those in our community and those in global communities. So how can we take the actions to ensure that we are getting the best outcome for all of us globally? Number 15, advocacy and action for climate health. Advocacy involves conversations with friends, family, and elected representatives, building collective support, understanding privilege, and addressing systemic gaps. Addressing climate anxiety and promoting sustainability is crucial for mental well-being and equitable access to health. We all need to be a part of the conversation around climate change. And that conversation might just be us talking with our friends and our families about climate change and whether it's affecting us, how it's affecting us, how it's making us feel. Just start that conversation today. Moving on to the next topic, new tools and innovation. Technology is revolutionizing public health through real-time data and innovative tools like AI, COVID-19 tests, and telehealth. Equity in these advancements is vital for addressing health disparities, supported by tools like Gemini and ChatGPT for research and community engagement initiatives like MBAID, which we'll talk about soon. There are a lot of ethical considerations that have to be thought about and equity considerations that have to be thought about as we think about new tools and innovations and the advancement of technology and how that intersects with public health. So the five themes that rose up here were the role of technology in public health, equity in technological advancement, generative AI in public health, data, justice, trust, and transformation, and lastly, ethical considerations and future prospects. Number 16, the role of technology in public health. Technologies serve as essential tools for enhancing public health outcomes by providing real-time accurate population data. Various technologies, including AI, COVID-19 testing kits, geospatial technology, wearable technology, telehealth, and social media monitoring, play a crucial role in modern public health. We have to understand that technology is all around us. They could be from the fax machine that's being used in that local public health department all the way to the incorporation and implementation of ChatGPT to really better our work. We have to find ways that we can use technology to support public health, not only on the micro scale, but on the macro scale so that we are ensuring equity. And going on to number 17. Equity and technological advancements. Equity must be central to advancements in technology and public health to ensure that communities most impacted have access to innovative solutions. Efforts like local public health data transformation aim to provide technology benefits to smaller health departments to ensure that strategic planning and community health needs assessments are effectively implemented. We need to always think about who are the communities that are suffering the most because of an issue and how do our solutions impact those communities. When we think about those communities, oftentimes then we can have solutions that have a cascading up effect to support other communities, but we cannot forget the most vulnerable and most impacted communities. Number 18, generative AI in public health. Generative AI, like Gemini and ChatGPT, has the potential to support public health researchers, especially those for whom English is not their first language. AI tools can aid in training, understanding specific populations, and challenging established beliefs, contributing to global submissions and enhancing public health research. There's so much opportunity at the intersection of generative AI and public health. There's going to be an episode released very soon where I talk more deeply with one of our expert panelists on this topic. And I'm very excited to learn more about and dive more into this. And I think it's a tool that we should all get familiar with using because it's not going to go anywhere. So we really have to build our proficiencies to know how to actively use generative AI to drive forward public health, our professional lives, and our personal lives. Number 19, I think it is, data, justice, trust, and transformation. And as you can tell, I don't have the numbers written down here. So initiatives like the Modernized for Health Justice or MADE Health by the De Beaumont Foundation focuses on data justice, community-driven approaches, and building public trust through engagement and collaboration. Data transformation should address the needs and capacities of public health departments, ensuring inclusivity and democratizing of data to benefit the community. I would absolutely recommend that you check out more about this MADE in Health program, as well as listen to the panel discussion, because I think it's so important. What does data justice look like? How do we center the voices of community in having data justice, having knowledge of how they can handle their data. And one of the things that really stands out to me from the panel conversation was one of the things that Jeff said is whoever has the data has the power. And I think we really have to consider that as we're moving forward in public health and in data transformation. Number 20, ethical considerations and future prospects. Ethical considerations, including autonomy, bias, and governance, are vital in using technology for public health, emphasizing the need for accountability and data protection. The potential of emerging technologies like cloud AI, GPT-4, and Turbo, along with podcasts and literature, providing exciting avenues for future advancements in public health. While there are going to be many, many advancements in technology, in data, in AI use, we always have to come back to the ethical considerations, the biases within the algorithms, and really ensuring that we are centering those that have been most marginalized so we are not exacerbating already existing health inequities. Before we move on to the next topic, I just wanted to send you all an invite to the public health community. It is a community that I have launched. We have been doing some brand building, some career coaching. So if that is something that you're interested in, or you would just like accountability or a space to share with other public health professionals and network, be sure to check out the link below and join our public health community. I think it's going to be closing at the end of May. So be sure to join today so that you don't miss it. In me. So moving on to reproductive and sexual health. We're delving into this topic, crucial topic of reproductive and sexual health, which are interconnected and essential topics that should be introduced early in our education. Despite the importance of comprehensive sex education, stigma, limited insurance access, and funding constraints challenge access to reproductive health care. Here are the five themes that came up in the reproductive and sexual health conversation. Understanding reproductive and sexual health, sexual education and stigma, access to reproductive health care, advocacy and youth engagement, integrating sexual health and resources. Number 21, understanding reproductive and sexual health. Reproductive health and sexual health are interconnected concepts that go beyond just the act of sex. Encompassing broader aspects of sexuality, it is essential to initiate conversations about sexuality and the reproductive health early, starting from high school and middle school. One of the things that's so important here is that reproductive and sexual health conversations don't have to start off talking about sex. They have to talk about autonomy, talking about consent, talking about healthy relationships. These are the basis for the conversations that we really have to have as a society around reproductive and sexual health. 22, sexual education and stigma. Comprehensive sexual education, including menstrual education, is crucial and often linked to broader sexual education. Stigma surrounding sexual health is fueled by abstinence-only education, misinformation online, and fear of judgment, hindering effective communication and understanding. We all have our parts to play in talking about sexual education, in having conversations around it so that we can reduce stigma and we can have these conversations and know that they are a norm, that they are important for the prevention work in public health. Number 23, access to reproductive health care. Insurance access remains a significant structural barrier to reproductive health care, especially for marginalized communities. Policy changes in medical schools, intentional community-based healthcare centers, and comprehensive sex education from K through 12 are essential to improve access. We need to build off the sexual education that is being learned and then talk about reproductive health care, reproductive access. What does this mean? How do we ensure that communities have access, whether that's through insurance, whether that's through doulas, whether that's through other means of public health departments educating the communities? We need to ensure that there's not only access to information, but there's access to the types of care that people need. And ensuring that there's culturally sensitive care is very, very important as communities and people really want to show up as themselves, and we need to create safe spaces so that they can show up as themselves and we can work together to improve their health. 24, advocacy and youth engagement. Grassroots organizations often face challenges due to lack of funding and support, emphasizing the need for advocacy training and support. Youth advocacy initiatives, including Advocates for Youth and advocacy summer camps, play a vital role in driving change and raising awareness. It goes without saying that we need to advocate, we need to engage youth and everyone in the conversation around sexual health, around reproductive health care, so that we have equitable access for all. 25, integrating sexual health and resources. Sexual health intersects with mental, physical, and financial well-being, necessitating its integration into various aspects of healthcare. Sexual health should encompass pleasure, aligning with the World Health Organization's definition, and resources like the Association of Women of Color Sexual Health Network, Bedsider, and Ask RU are valuable tools for education and support. As I said, sexual health is a big part of all of our health, and we need to have broader conversations around what that means to be sexually healthy, as well as create spaces for advocacy around sexual and reproductive health. Moving on to our next theme is emergency preparedness. Emergency preparedness is essential in the face of increasing natural disasters from climate change. It involves anticipating and managing crises, equipping individuals and communities with necessary tools and knowledge. Equity and inclusivity in preparedness are crucial, with local health departments and system-level management playing vital roles in response to continuous improvement. I believe that we are on 25 right now. Please correct me if I am wrong. 26, I mean. So the themes that kind of arose from emergency preparedness were the importance of emergency preparedness, understanding emergency preparedness, individual and community preparedness, promoting equity, inclusivity, and education, and system and organizational preparedness. 26, importance of emergency preparedness. Emergency preparedness is crucial for ensuring community safety before, during, and after emergencies or natural disasters. Being prepared protects individuals and communities, especially underserved populations that can be disproportionately affected by disasters. With the increasing frequency and severity of natural disasters due to climate change, preparedness becomes even more critical. We all have to understand that climate change is changing how often we have to think about emergencies, and emergency preparedness is always happening in the background, even when we don't think about it. We have to be prepared for all the natural disasters and all the other things that might occur. Number 27, understanding emergency preparedness. Emergency preparedness involves anticipating potential crises and protecting health both in the short and the long term. All disasters have cascading effects, and preparedness should address structural damage, utility disruptions, and public transit issues. How do we ensure that the short and long term is taking care of all the preparedness needs that a community might need? Well, we have to ensure that the communities are part of the conversations and that they are aware of what is available and what are the emergency preparedness plans that a community may have. Number 28, individuals and community preparedness. Individuals should be equipped with essential tools and knowledge for emergencies without overspending. Recognizing specific health needs such as oxygen, dialysis, and medications is vital. Awareness of local emergency alert systems and prioritizing the top regional emergencies is essential for preparedness. So really thinking about what are the top emergencies that happen in my region. Are earthquakes a big issue here? Are storms a big issue here? Are flooding a big issue? Is flooding a big issue here? And really planning backwards from that. Many times you don't have to overspend on emergency preparedness because we already have the tools in our houses that can keep us prepared. We just have to ensure that all those tools are in the correct place so that we have an emergency toolkit ready. And then we also have to ensure that we're doing things like having non-perishable food when emergencies are arising and different things like this. Number 29, promoting equity, inclusivity, and education. Equity and inclusivity should be central in the emergency preparedness to ensure all voices, especially vulnerable populations, are heard and prioritized. Effective communication strategies tailored to community preferences are crucial for public awareness and engagement. Educational institutions can play a role in promoting emergency preparedness principles through engaging content and workforce development. There's a lot that needs to be done to ensure that we are tailoring how we are talking about emergency preparedness and ensuring that this information is accessible and we are really communicating in impactful ways that get people to move and essentially or ideally prevent a lot of the issues from happening that may happen throughout an emergency. Number 30, system and organizational preparedness. System-level emergency management should consider the cascading effects of incidents and focus on redundancy and continuous improvement. Local health departments play a critical role in responding to immediate issues such as measles outbreaks and should prioritize regional readiness initiatives like the city readiness initiatives. It is so important that we are not only thinking about emergency preparedness from an individual perspective, but at a systems level. How are we building and thinking about not only the first order consequences of an emergency, let's say a flooding, but what are the cascading effects that occur because of that flooding? And how can we create interventions to ensure that the most amount of people are safe and we are ensuring that those cascading issues, effects don't continue to cascade without us creating solutions and creating ways and avenues to ensure that we are doing our best to get at the systems level and ensure that issues aren't being exacerbated when we could have prevented it. I'm just going to take a second here to pause and say, don't forget you can join the public health community throughout April, throughout May. It is going to be a space where you can learn to navigate your public health career, learn to build your public health brand. Really want to share more about building a brand, whether that's on LinkedIn, on Instagram. So if you have any interest in that or just networking or just getting to the next stage of your career, we've been doing some resume and cover letter workshops, really trying to identify ways to support people. And we'll be doing a lot more connecting and networking. So be sure to join. The link is below. Moving us on to the last theme, the future of public health. Public health grapples with an 80,000 professional shortage and lacks direct loan forgiveness programs. Job hunting is complex amid rising awareness and funding cuts requiring targeted strategies. A master of public health degree is valuable, but choosing the right school and career services is crucial. Diversity and equity are pressing needs, with a focus on supporting young professionals and people of color being needed to ensure that we have a diverse public health workforce that matches the communities that we serve. Building authentic relationships and implementing transparent supportive retention strategies are essential for fostering inclusivity in public health careers to ensure that people are staying and new people are joining the public health workforce. The five themes that were highlighted here were challenges and opportunities in public health, career pathways and job searches in public health, value and investment in public health education, diversity, equity, and professional development, and lastly, employee-employer dynamics and retention strategies. So to dive into number 31, challenges and opportunities in public health. Public health has faced various challenges and shifts in the landscape over the past 4 years. Despite its importance, the public health workforce faces a shortage of around 80,000 professionals, and the field lacks direct loan forgiveness programs. The need for effective communication and marketing of public health, especially in recruiting a diverse workforce, remains critical. There's a lot of work to be done in public health. There's a lot of opportunity in public health, and there's a lot of marketing that we need to do to share that public health is a viable career option for communities that we support in a lot of this work. We have to ensure that the public health student loan forgiveness program is advocated for so that we are able to have more people go into local, state, territorial public health careers and have a pathway to get forgiveness for their loans while also building essential skill sets and giving back to their communities. Number 32, career pathways and job search in public health. Job searching in public health can be challenging, requiring specific roles, team matches, and tailored resumes and cover letters. Factors like increased public health awareness, funding cuts, salary transparency complexities impact job availability and search strategies. If you are struggling with your search strategies and need support, join the public health community. That is the best place that I can give you tailored support, and you can have accountability with your peers to really drive forward. While there are so many job availabilities in public health, one thing that really stood out to me in this panel conversation is that there's still so much people in public health. Since the pandemic started, the MPH graduates have blown up, have increased in number, and in doing so, all of them are graduating, which is creating a lot more saturated of a market. So it is going to be harder to find a job. And that's why you need to really be on top of your things, be intentional, have accountability, and be strategic in how you're applying to jobs. Number 33, value and investment in public health education. An MPH degree is valuable for those interested in pursuing a career in public health. Researching schools, considering career services, and exploring loan forgiveness programs are essential steps in educating and career planning. We should think with the end in mind. Be intentional in choosing the school that you're going to, for the services that it provides, for the connections and the alumni. Really be intentional, because it's not an investment that you should just take very lightly. This is one of the biggest investments that you'll make into yourself, into your career development. Be intentional, have conversations, ask the hard questions, really know what you're going to get out of the school that you're choosing to go to, and be intentional in building out your network and gaining the opportunities that are important for you. Number 34, diversity, equity, and professional development. The importance of envisioning a future where equity and diversity are central to public health cannot be overemphasized. Professional development programs like boot camps and continuous engagement with public health workforce are crucial, especially for young professionals and people of color. That's why I created this platform, to share professional development resources with you all so that you all can better navigate your career journeys and find career success, whatever that looks like. So I hope that you're finding this information and all the other information on the Public Health Millennial helpful. If there are other resources that you would like, feel free to reach out to me and be sure to join the community. That's where I can really dive deeper and support you as you are developing in your career. And last but not least, number 35, employee-employer dynamics and retention strategies. Building authentic relationships, transparency in job expectations, and supportive retention tactics are vital for both employees and employers. Managers should possess leadership and people skills, encourage open communication, and foster an inclusive work environment to drive diverse individuals into public health careers. We all have a part to play to ensure that public health is diverse, whether we are on the side of studying or we are on the side of being an employer and trying to get someone into the workforce. We have to really ensure that we are marketing public health and creating opportunities for retention in organizations by asking employees what they want and then providing those resources and supports to really meet them at their needs so that we have a public health workforce that matches the communities that we are trying to serve. So those were 35 takeaways from National Public Health Week. Let me know which one of those you all thought were most impactful. Be sure to check out the panel discussions because you can learn a lot more. This was just a high-level overview of the panels. And if you stuck around this long, then you're waiting to hear some of the overarching themes that were underscored throughout the entire National Public Health Week. Some of the overarching themes underscored the importance of equity, advocacy, education, innovation, community resilience, sustainability, and career support in addressing complex challenges across public health, climate change, reproductive health, technology, civic engagement, and all other national public health themes. The themes emphasize the interconnectedness of individuals and community well-being, the urgency that is needed to address these disparities and systemic issues, and the need for collaborative efforts to create meaningful change and promote a healthier, more inclusive future. So, some of the things that really stood out to me, as I just highlighted, were equity and inclusion, really noting that we always have to focus on that. And what does that mean? That means that we engage with people whose issues are impacting them, so that we have their voice in the conversation, that we have their voice in the solutions that are created. And through that, we are building community engagement and hopefully taking those voices to advocate for the changes at the system, policy, structural levels. And I think it just goes back to show like the importance of education on public health, education on what you can do in public health. And if you're here, be sure to check out some of the Public Health Careers episodes, because there's so much to learn, so many diverse ways to impact health in public health with a public health skill set. And I look forward to continuing to share more of those. So if you have not as yet, be sure to subscribe, share this with a friend, check out the National Public Health Week panels, and join the public health community so that we can grow and support each other so that we can realize our public health goals together. These were 35 takeaways from National Public Health Week. I hope you found this insightful. I will see you all next week back with the interviews. Take care, everyone. Peace.